From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hello and welcome to another entertainment podcast from NewsOK.com and The Oklahoman. I'm George Lang, and with me today is Brandy McDonald and Nathan Poppy, our new intern, and we're talking about the movies that are coming out this week. And let's start out with the big one. It's the latest from Pixar. It's called Up. Tell us about it, Brandy.
Well, it's another great cinematic achievement for Pixar. I mean, it's sort of like, what did you expect? I mean, you expect greatness from them, and they delivered. It wasn't quite up to the level of Wall-E or The Incredibles or Monsters, Inc. It's directed by Pete Docter, who also directed Monsters, Inc. Mm-hmm. But we're still talking pretty terrific cinema here. In fact, I would say that my advice would be don't be late to Up, because besides the fact that, A, there's a teaser trailer for Toy Story 3 on it, which is nice, the first 10 minutes of this movie are some of the best cinema that you're probably going to see this year. Things that are incredibly poignant and very touching. The type of montage that you wish that they would make every person who's ever made a romantic comedy watch 10 times before they could proceed on filming. But then also some really just visually stunning, great footage. But it kind of on face value, and it's easy to take it on face value because there's kind of so much going on here. It sort of seems like this sort of elaborate flight of fancy, this guy who ties thousands of balloons to his house to float it away. But it also kind of feels like one of those sort of exotic adventures in faraway lands, sort of like an Indiana Jones or the movies that inspired Indiana Jones, right, from back in the 30s.
King Solomon's Mines and all that stuff.
Types of things. It's easy to kind of see those aspects of the movie and think, you know, face value, it's a fun film. But as always, with all of the Pixar features, particularly the later ones, there's more going on than just the surface, as beautiful as the surface is. I mean, this is a movie that you're talking about something that's a really sort of a fun buddy comedy. It's probably one of the best mismatched buddy comedies we've seen in a while. It's a great spoof of children's movies. That, mm-hmm. You know, some of those things that you have, talking animals that show up in children's movies and things like that. It's also this really just incredibly touching exploration of grief and loss. People who are dealing, I mean, characters who are dealing with real loss in their lives and are trying to cope with those. Bring Kleenex, because the hardest of hearts probably will be brought to tears by the opening when we're introduced to Carl Fredrickson. We meet him when he's just a boy, and he's really shy, he's really restrained. Really, the only time you see him express himself is in his idol worship of this famous explorer, Charles Muntz, who's voiced by Christopher Plummer.
Mm-hmm. And Fredrickson is voiced by Ed Asner, right?
Right, but when we meet him, he's a boy.
Right.
Not Ed Asner. Not Ed Asner, because Ed Asner has that wonderful, crusty, curmudgeonly, lovable curmudgeon kind of voice,
right,
gruff voice that works really, really well in this role. But when he's a boy, Carl meets, through their common love of exploring, this bold and chatty little girl named Ellie. And you see in this opening montage, as they grow up, they get married, they make their life together, they go through triumph and tragedy, and ultimately she dies in the course of this montage, which is no music. I mean, excuse me, no dialogue, just music. It's just this perfect score that just sort of really touches every moment, and just, I'm going to cry thinking about it. But after Ellie's death, Carl hides out in his home.
Oh, she's going to do it. She's going to cry.
He basically just hides out in his home. No, he hides out in his home. But developers want to get a hold of this house. It's the only one of this old sort of ragtag houses in this extremely old neighborhood, mm-hmm, that has been torn. All the rest have been torn down, and skyscrapers have been built there. So they're wanting to get rid of him, and sort of through the machinations of things, looks like he's going to be forced to move.
Asner's going
to
moon.
No, to move.
PG-13.
I tried to say move and balloon in the same word.
In 3D, no less.
3D, yes. Not that kind of moon in 3D. But no, but Carl is a retired balloon peddler, and so he uses all the leftover helium tanks he has, fills thousands of balloons with helium, ties them to the fireplace grate, rigs a couple of sails, and sends his house soaring away over the city. His destination is the legendary Paradise Falls in South America. It was a place that Charles Muntz, his childhood hero, explored a lot. And he and Ellie always planned to go on a trip there, but they never got to take it. And so he decides to go on this trip in his house that is a makeshift airship now, basically. Mm-hmm. But as soon after he sort of embarks, he finds out he has this unexpected passenger in Russell, who's voiced by newcomer Jordan Nagy, who is a zealous wilderness explorer whose goal is to earn his final merit badge, which is for assisting the elderly. So he's been following Mr. Fredrickson around. Mr. Fredrickson's been sending him on snipe hunts to try and get rid of him.
Right.
But he sort of has stuck because he has very important reasons for wanting to finish his final merit badge. Mm-hmm. And they take this sort of really perilous journey to get to South America. There's some great visuals of this, you know, balloon house flying into a thunderstorm. Some really terrific visuals that are really, I mean, it's really pretty exciting, pretty tense moments in it. But they get to South America, and they meet a colorful ostrich-like bird that sort of takes to following Russell around. But then they also meet this pack of dogs, and the dogs talk. But they don't talk because this is a Disney animated feature. They talk because their mysterious master has outfitted all of them with these high-tech collars that allow them to voice their thoughts. And to really to talk. And so you see the intelligence of the dog, but you also see those little quirks of dogs, like obsessions with squirrels, come up unexpectedly.
I'm glad movies. I never had one of those on one of my pets. It'd just be nothing but profanity. Anyway.
But one of these dogs is Doug, and he's a very friendly dog, and he's voiced by the writer and co-director Bob Peterson. He sort of adopts Carl as his master, even though Carl doesn't want to have anything to do with a dog. I mean, that's just, he's way too curmudgeonly for that. But Doug's help becomes really invaluable because this adventure starts to unfold, and nothing is kind of what it seems. It's a really interesting and intricate way that it unfolds. And it's just packed with some madcap action. Sometimes I felt like it got a little too zany, a little too over the top, but for the most part, it really, really works well as a spoof of children's movies with these talking dogs that are in here that act like dogs. I mean, because you see so many of these children's movies where the talking animals don't act like animals, they act like people.
A little bit of Jules Verne, a little bit of like traditional Disney, a lot of different things.
Right. And a lot of different ground is being covered in Up, and for the most part, it's all covered very, very well. It's
how's the 3D?
The 3D is terrific. I loved that it was not too gimmicky. Uh-huh. You know how there's so much of that, of the 3D experience is seeing things, ooh, come at you kind of thing. Not really so much. I mean, obviously there are things that come at you in the course of it, but I mean, the whole thing just looks like you're kind of more immersed in it. They make their processes more 3D anyway. Mm-hmm. And the glasses just kind of help to elevate that. The color in it is beautiful, too. I mean, when you see this house go up with all these balloons and they're flying through the city, you see the reflections of all the buildings off of the balloons.
Oh, cool.
I mean, so things like that are just really, really well done. And there's a lot of really interesting science that kind of gets involved with it when they get knocked out of the house. Mm-hmm. And so they've got, like, a water hose that was on the rack beside the house, and they're like leading the house like it's one of those giant parade balloons in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. So there's some really interesting things that they were able to do a lot more with this conceit of this floating house than I thought they would. I thought this might be kind of boring, they'd be stuck in this house and all this kind of stuff, and really it's more of a puzzle that they're trying to figure out about how to keep this house afloat and how to, you know, keep doing what they're doing and deal with these dogs and deal with this bird and deal with this situation with a house tied to them, basically.
Did Pixar, they always seem to be developing something new. There's a new leap in their animation quality. Was there something that you noticed this time out?
I think that you can see an improvement, and it could just be because the last one we saw was Ratatouille, but there weren't any real people that were animated too much in WALL-E. I mean, you saw some of them on the ship and things like that. Right. But the leap has really been made in how they make people look so much more realistic in this. I mean, Ed Asner really looks, I mean, his character looks like Ed Asner. I mean, you know, it looks like him. You can easily forget that he is, you know, an animated character that's got this sort of, you know, very stiff jaw and this sort of scrunchy, cranky old guy face,
I hate Spunk.
Yeah, right. So he's got that in the square glasses and all this kind of stuff. But what really struck me, besides the fact that the 3D is just really, really great, I mean, better than what we've seen in anything animated before, I would say. The people look so incredibly realistic.
Right.
And that really sort of heightens some of the absurdity whenever you've got dogs that have talking collars and weird multicolored 4-foot-tall birds and things like that. It really sort of helps to accentuate that. But he looks like he could be a real person. So
that's cool. Okay, well,
I gave it 3.5 stars. WALL-E was a 4-star for me. Incredibles was a 4-star, but this is a 3.5, which tain't bad.
Grab your kids, get in line. The one that you
borrow kids.
That's right, borrow
Forget
kids.
Forget the kids.
Okay, and the next one is, of course, now we're gonna wag the finger of shame. We're gonna wag every finger we can find at Universal for this one, because this is an uncommon thing. This is, well, first of all, we're talking about Drag Me to Hell, which is the latest from Sam Raimi, and
not
we don't
in Oklahoma City for critics.
Not screened for critics, and this is one of those uncommon deals. This is a horror movie that everybody seems to love. Okay,
yeah, thanks, Universal.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thanks for nothing.
We're calling you out. Yeah, we're NBC Universal. You better start screening them. I've State of Play, Duplicity. Happened to those?
You're making George mad.
You're making me mad. All right.
You don't want
to
see him
angry. You need to
start
screening this. But Nathan, tell us what Roger Moore from the Orlando Sentinel said about Drag Me to Hell.
Well, like you said, it was not screened here in Oklahoma. But don't let that scare you away, because Roger Moore gave it 3 out of 4 stars. So scary that it's good.
So scary that it's good. Excellent. So tell us a little bit about what it's about, besides dragging people to hell.
Well,
you have to be more specific than that.
It's from one extreme to the other. If you're not going up, you should definitely get dragged to hell. Young Christine, she works at a bank, you know, pretty normal day, until a gypsy, who probably has the best gypsy name in cinema, Ganoush.
Ganoush!
Ganoush!
Ganoush! Baba Ganoush!
Love it.
Waddles all in, eats all of her candy off of her desk.
See,
and
that sucks.
She wants an extension on her mortgage. That always happens. Always happens
gypsies
at banks.
And mortgages.
Gypsies
and
eating my candy.
Well, it's just interns at our office that eats candy.
Young Christine, played by Allison Lohman, denies her the extension. And the gypsy does what every smart gypsy would. She places a curse on young Christine. And it doesn't
gypsies.
Look good, because all hell is set loose on her.
That's a bad thing.
Poor Allison Lohman.
Poor Allison Lohman. She's getting killed and...
That's never good, but yet, Sam Raimi, who's of Spider-Man fame, he did the last 3 Spider-Man films, it's kind of a return to form for Mr. Raimi. He did the Evil Dead series,
yes.
Which, if you're
Yay.
Familiar with it, it's chainsaw shotgun action.
That's right. It's in the pantheon.
It's pretty awesome, baby. Yeah.
He knows how to do his silly horror movies, and it definitely shows, apparently, in Drag Me to Hell.
Not that we would know.
Absolutely
we
not.
Seen it
because
yet. So tell me, is there a Bruce Campbell sighting in Drag Me to Hell?
I am not familiar with Bruce Campbell being in this film. It doesn't look like he's in it.
We wouldn't know, because you didn't screen it for us.
He didn't screen it for us. We wouldn't know. And half the time, he doesn't show up in the credits in a Sam Raimi movie anyway. He just shows up, and everybody goes, "Oh, that's Bruce!" But...
Well,
this one definitely looks
like something that we all want to go see, and we're pointing at you, NBC Universal, Eric Gonzalez.
He's naming names now. He's just naming names.
Eric Gonzalez. Stop sending us those emails, all right? We want to see some of you, NBC Universal movies, okay?
To give you an idea, the email says, "We have chosen not to screen whatever movie, in this case Drag Me to Hell, in Oklahoma City time in advance for critics."
Now,
we get those emails and we don't like them.
Now,
and it makes us sad.
Let's be fair to Eric. Okay, you know, people all over the country are getting these emails.
Yeah.
And so it's not just Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City, you don't need to feel bad. It's not like you've been singled out by Universal on this. Everybody's getting it, but NBC Universal, you need to learn what's happening.
Yeah, because they haven't screened their last couple of big movies, and they have not gone.
Yeah,
very
only
far.
Fast and Furious. Only Fast and Furious has done well. So learn from your mistakes. Start screening them for critics in advance of the premiere day.
Well, I mean,
okay?
Come on, it's Sam Raimi. I mean, besides
that's right.
Even taking into account Evil Dead and what cult classics those films have become. If you were talking about box office power, I mean, have there been movies that have performed much better than the last 3 Spider-Man? Not that many.
I mean, you
so
Dark Knight, but
I think
you know.
That honestly, he's the kind of director that deserves to have his work put in front of critics to be screened. How else are you going to get good word of mouth? I mean, you know, there's a small handful of critics that have gotten to see it that are really loving it, and we would love to love it as well.
Absolutely, and if they don't start screening the movies, we'll send the Oklahoman Gypsy.
That's right.
Goose Braba.
To eat their candy.
And
you're not going to like that.
And drop curses.
All over the place.
All over. Just curses everywhere. Curses.
That's right. Okay, well, so those are the mass market releases that are coming out this week. And then I've got one more that is screening this weekend at the Oklahoma City Museum of Art, Sam Noble Theater. And it's The Cake Eaters, which is the directorial debut from Mary Stuart Masterson, who we, of course, know from her roles in Benny and June. And Some Kind of
Fried
Wonderful,
Fried Green Tomatoes,
all of those sort of those
great
films
90s,
of our youth,
90s
you know,
films,
yeah. And so this is her first film as a director, and it's sort of a rural slice of life, and it stars Kristen Stewart, who we know of course from Twilight
fame,
and she was most recently in Adventureland, and she plays a young woman with a degenerative muscular disease, and she really connects with this character. It's we think of these kind of performances as often sort of your Oscar bait type thing. It's not that obvious here. She seems to be really putting a lot into this, and it feels genuine. Well, anyway, so her character is named Georgia, and she's 16 years old. She's a beautiful girl, but she's dying of Friedreich's ataxia, which attacks the central nervous system. Leaves her really unsteady. She's ultimately going to end up in a wheelchair. But to raise awareness about the disease, her mother Violet, who's played by Talia Balsam, takes these art nude photographs of her, which is kind of an uncomfortable thing for her at 16, because everybody's so self aware when they're that age anyway.
It's your mom.
What a caring mother.
It's your mom.
You
know, but at the same, you know, at the same time that her mom's sort of a libertine when it comes to this kind of thing, she's hyper protective of her daughter, you know, for any number of reasons, because she's sick and also because she's a
16?
Teenager, you know. So, but Georgia, she sees, you know, the clock ticking, because you know ultimately she's not going to live a long life, and so she wants to lose her virginity. Okay, and so a lot of the Cake Eaters centers on her quest to get this, you know, young townie in this small town in upstate New York named Beagle. You always have these Tennessee Williams type.
What is it about these rural set slice of life movies?
Exactly.
Are we all walking around with the name Dutch or Bo or Goober?
Well, Bruce Dern is named Easy in this.
Easy, that's great. Everybody I knew back growing up in rural Oklahoma was named Easy. There were many Easies. We all had to use our last initial. My name was Easy till I changed it to Brandy.
You know, but Beagle is kind of a withdrawn guy. He's kind of, you know, he's...
Because kind of, his name is Beagle.
It's probably because his name is Beagle, but... Yeah, so really, you know, when Georgia meets up with him, I mean, it's one of these situations where she has something that she needs from him. He kind of needs something from her, too, and it's not just sex. It's like... I don't know, maybe some self-respect, maybe some self-assurance. And
someone to love him for who he is.
That's right.
Kibbles and bits.
There you go.
That's right. Maybe some begging strips.
That'd be great.
So anyway, and then you've got this, you've got a couple of subplots involving Beagle's brother, who's a sort of a failed indie rocker who's
Rottweiler.
Returned to town. His name's not Rottweiler.
Spike.
It really isn't. His name is Guy, because he's a guy. And then you have Beagle's dad, who's played by Bruce Dern, and the aforementioned Easy, who's been kind of carrying on with George's grandmother for the last 25 years. So you've got one of the big problems with The Cake Eaters is that it is overly packed with plot. You know, I mean, there's a ton of stuff where really the simple story here about Georgia and Beagle is probably all you really need. But then it just kind of gets ladled on, and screenwriter
Jay in a very soap opery kind of way.
Yeah, exactly. And really, it just wouldn't. This wouldn't be worth watching unless, if not for Stewart's performance. And, you know, she's kind of a divisive figure, especially among the Twilight people. That, you know, Twilight fans, they either love her or hate her, it seems like, on all the message boards. And, you know, I guess when Bella is such a prominent character in their imagination, you know, they're either going to like the way she's portrayed or not.
And well, so I would count myself among a fan, but I'm not like a twihard fan. But mostly because I don't like to use the term. The terminology is so disgusting.
That is disgusting.
We've admired her acting since back, you know, whenever she was in Panic Room. I mean, she's been a great actress.
Right. When she was 13 in Panic Room. She was fantastic in that, too.
She seems like she always puts in a strong performance.
That's right. So she's really the one to watch. And you've got a solid cast here of some veteran actors, but really the only reason to see it is for her performance. The rest of it is the kind of thing that you can expect to see like on a Lifetime Movie Network, one of these wholesome, you know, slice of life rural dramas. Where everybody, like I said, has these Tennessee Williams names.
And there's way too much artificial drama.
That's right.
In there.
That's right. So, I gave it 2.5 stars. It's not terrible, but, you know, you could really expect something a lot better. But that is showing at the museum this weekend, and so
if you don't want to be scared, or if you don't want to fly with Pixar,
if you don't want to see Star Trek again, you don't want to be horribly impressed, then you go see the cake.
Settle with the cake.
That's right. Eat the cake. Anyway, okay, so that's what you've got this week. Up is the obvious choice from our perspective, and then Drag Me to Hell for those of us who worship at the feet of Sam Raimi and the Evil Dead series.
And check out Weekend Look. I have a retrospective about Pixar. This is their 10th film, and so we've done a retrospective about what Pixar has accomplished over the course of these 10 films to become such a great powerhouse of an animation studio.
Basically changing animation as we know it. Anyway, that's what we have this week. And for Brandy McDonald and Nathan Poppy, I'm George Lang. Thanks for downloading.